Have you ever been there? You know, in that place where you're facing just huge doubts. Maybe you've been given this incredible promise, something life-changing, but well, your reality just doesn't match up at all.
Oh, absolutely. It could be a big dream, a goal, or just this deep personal longing, right? And you want to believe, you really do, but what you see right in front of you seems to shout the opposite.
Exactly that feeling, that tension between what could be and, well, what is. And that's precisely the kind of raw human moment we find right at the heart of Genesis chapter 15.
A really pivotal story.
Yeah.
And that's where we're going today for this deep dive, Genesis 15, specifically verses 1 through 5.
Yeah, we want to go beyond just reading the words on the surface. We're aiming to dig into the original Hebrew, uncover some of the layers of meaning hidden there.
It's amazing how this seemingly simple chat between, a guy living in a tent and God reveals these huge cosmic truths, but also some very real, very intimate struggles.
It's quite a journey Abram takes just in these few verses, isn't it? From feeling completely childless, empty, to suddenly being asked to look up at the stars.
A massive shift in perspective. So, yeah, let's get into it.
Okay, so it starts in verse 1. After these things, the word of YHWH came to Abram in a vision. What's the significance of it being in a vision?
Well, that phrase, the word of YHWH, D-bar YHWH, in Hebrew, it's already powerful. But in a vision, that suggests something more than just hearing words.
Right, not just auditory. It sounds more immersive.
Exactly. It's like a multi-sensory experience.
Yeah.
Abram isn't just listening. He's seeing, experiencing this divine communication. It sets the stage for something really profound.
And the first words out of God's mouth, so to speak, "Fear not, Abram, I am your shield and your very great reward." Powerful reassurance.
Especially that word shield, Megan. It's got these strong military protective vibes, like a shield in battle.
And thinking about the timing, Abram just came back from that big fight in chapter 14, relying on his own men.
Precisely. So God saying, I am your magoon right then. It's like saying, your real protection isn't your 318 guys, Abram. It's me.
Yeah.
Kind of shifts his focus, doesn't it?
Definitely. From his own strength to divine security. And then the second part, your very great reward. What's packed into that? Is it just about, future prosperity?
Good question. The Hebrew Shekharah Karbomej means something like, your reward will be exceedingly great. But many think it's deeper than just material blessings.
Ah, so the reward isn't just what God gives.
But God himself. The relationship, the presence of God, that's the ultimate reward. It reframes the whole idea of value.
That's huge. So you have this incredibly profound promise protection and God as the ultimate reward. And yet, Abram's immediate reaction, it's so human.
Isn't it just? Verse 2. Oh Lord God, what will you give me? For I continue childless. It's so blunt, so raw.
You can almost hear the ache in his voice. Like, that's all wonderful, God, but I have no heir. Even with these grand promises, his personal pain is right there at the surface.
It really grounds the narrative. And that word he uses for childless, ara, it means barren, stripped bare. It perfectly captures that feeling of emptiness, of lacking legacy.
A very potent word for a deep ache. And he doesn't just state the problem, he offers his own very practical solution, right?
Yeah, he follows up immediately. The heir of my house is Eliezer of Damascus. He's basically pointing to his chief servant.
Which tells us about the customs back then, the Ben Meshech Biti, the steward of my household. Without a biological son, the servant would inherit everything.
It shows Abram being pragmatic, almost trying to manage God's promise, you know? He's looking at his reality and saying, okay, maybe this is how the promise works out.
It raises that question, doesn't it? How often do we try to fit a big, maybe divine-level promise into our own understandable, manageable box?
All the time, probably. We try to make it fit our current circumstances, our logic,
Yeah.
like Abram with Eliezer.
But God's response in verse 4, it's immediate and incredibly clear. No room for misinterpretation there.
Not at all. And behold, the word of YHWH came to him. That man shall not be your heir. Your very own son shall be your heir. Direct. Specific.
It's like God just shuts down Abram's attempt to sort of make the promise smaller, more achievable in his own eyes. God says, nope, not Eliezer.
And the language is key. God says the heir will come, mimeach, literally from your own belly or from your own loins.
Wow. So undeniably biological, not symbolic, not adopted, from Abram himself.
Exactly. It's God doubling down, saying, no, Abram, this promise is about you, about your own flesh and blood. It removes all ambiguity about where this heir is coming from.
Talk about clarity. And that brings us to maybe the most famous part of this passage, verse 5, the stargazing moment.
It's such a beautiful shift. God brought him outside and said, "Look toward heaven and number the stars if you are able to count them. So shall your offspring be."
There's a gentleness there, isn't there? The Hebrew habet na look or gaze, but with a please kind of feel. It's an invitation.
You know, not a harsh command. More like, come outside, Abram. Lift your eyes. Look up from your tent, from your doubts. An invitation to wonder.
And asking him to number the stars sepher. You mentioned this word has a double meaning.
Right. The root sepher means not just to count, like arithmetic, but also to recount, to tell a story.
Ah, so it's not just try to count these infinite things. It's more like...
It's like God is saying, imagine trying to tell the story of every single one of these stars. That vast, uncountable narrative. That's what your descendants will be like. It turns it from a math problem into a story problem, an epic one.
That changes everything. It's about the scope of the story, the vastness of the legacy, and then that final declaration, Kuyiye Azeka.
So shall your seed be. Short, powerful, certain, absolutely unshakable.
And connecting the star imagery back, didn't God already promise descendants like the dust of the earth?
He did, back in chapter 13. So now you have this amazing double imagery, dust and stars.
So grounded on earth, tangible like dust.
But also vast, cosmic, stretching to the heavens like the stars. It's a promise of, well, a heaven and earth kind of legacy. It covers everything.
Incredible. So when we pull back and look at these five verses, what's the big takeaway? How does God meet Abram's very real doubt?
It's striking, isn't it? Abram expresses this deep sense of emptiness, that his childlessness. And God doesn't rebuke him? Not at all.
Instead, he gives him this immense cosmic vision.
Yeah. It's like the human void, that personal ache, gets completely enveloped, almost swallowed up by this massive promise of Zaria, of offspring, as countless as the stars. It's not just about one child anymore.
It's about an unimaginable future, way beyond what Abram could have possibly conceived on his own.
And that contrast is fascinating. The God of the entire cosmos, the stars themselves, bends down to have this intimate conversation with, essentially, a nomad living in a tent.
Stretching his faith, not by ignoring his pain, but by showing him something infinitely bigger. Taking him from despair to the heavens, literally.
It's like both the dust below his feet and the stars way above his head are now preaching the same message. Abram, your destiny is huge, both tangible and cosmic.
So, wrapping up our deep dive into Genesis 15:1-5... We've really walked with Abram, haven't we? From that raw cry of childlessness to this mind-blowing invitation to see his legacy in the stars.
And digging into the Hebrew, words like Dabar in a vision, Magan as shield, Sheker as reward, Abram's honest, God's precise Mimeka, and that gentle hobbit not to sepher the stars, they really illuminate the journey.
It shows how deep personal doubt can be met, not with anger, but with an invitation to a much, much bigger perspective. And maybe understanding these layers can give you a fresh look at the big promises and the big doubts in your own life.
It really can. It invites you to look up, perhaps.
Which leads to our final thought for you to ponder. How often do we do what Abram initially did? We get a glimpse of something big, a grand promise maybe, but we immediately try to shrink it down, reinterpret it to fit what we can see, what feels manageable right now.
Yeah, like trying to make Eliezer fit the bill.
Exactly. So the question is, what stars, what vast potential or promise might you be overlooking in your own story simply because you're focusing only on the dust, on the immediate, tangible reality right in front of you? Something to think about.